Welcome to Magic in the Moment, Mindfulness in Real Time. My name is Clayton Platt, and I'll be your host for this podcast journey. Now, for many people, practicing mindfulness has very little to do with sitting on a cushion, lighting incense, or even focusing on their breath, just paying attention to what they're doing at any moment. And doing this intentionally can create that same magic. Our time together is intended to share how mindfulness plays out in everyday life for our guests. And before we begin, here's a word from our sponsor, Meditation for Leadership. We all feel it, the pressure to keep up, to perform, to push through. But lasting success doesn't come from speeding up. It comes from slowing down, leaning in, and creating the space to lead from within. That space is where we shift from autopilot to intention, building mindful habits that strengthen focus and calm. It's where we stay connected to our values and purpose, choosing to respond instead of react. It's where we unlock our potential to positively shape our own lives and empower others to grow and thrive. That's the work of Meditation for Leadership. If you're ready to create the space for sustainable success, visit meditationforleadership.org. Welcome, David Hubbard. I am so thrilled to have you on this podcast. I've been waiting for this. You are a bright light in my life, and thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you, Clayton, and it's wonderful to be here, and please know the feeling is mutual. I'm excited to be on this incredible podcast and to spend some time with you, which I always enjoy. So just chatting with you is always a pleasure. Yes. Any excuse to do that, any excuse to hang out with you, and I'm in, my friend. Thank you for having me.
What a great start. But David, I was thinking back. It's one of the things that I was trying to recall, and maybe you can help me here, was you have this obviously very important role at a major corporation, but how did you get involved with meditation and mindfulness? What drew you to that? I'd like to start on a personal level if I could.
Yeah, please. Yeah, and by the way, I think that's the, if I start by saying I have a very personal practice that, because I want to be good at my job like us all, has become part of my work and professional practice. But to answer your question, I was first exposed to mindfulness as a teenager in college, by the way. I just didn't follow it through, but I knew that it existed and randomly studied with a group of people in New York called the Emin for a few weeks when I was home one time. And I won't go through the sordid story of it all, other than to say that I spent time with a group of people that meditated and practiced a bit of telepathy. And that helped me recognize that there was lots more of myself to explore. And I've been on a journey to continue to explore myself and better myself since. It is a lifelong journey for us all. And I'd really say probably in the last decade, but even more so last 7 or so years, a meditation practice has been an important part of that for me. In many respects, I recognize I'm my best self when I have good habits, and I've added meditation into the things that I believe help me prepare for the day and that are habits that help me live. And finding that, then it's like trying to take a vitamin every day. And while there are days you miss doing what you should do, I believe I'm healthier mentally, spiritually, and physically when I do. And even if I've just psychologically put that in my own head, it's worth it. And so that's been the journey so far. I don't want to be too long-winded on your first question, but I've really found it to be a medicine, like a medicine for me almost.
Yeah, I get that. And that sense of being exposed to something that intrigues you up front, and then, okay, maybe not immediately dive full in, but it's like you've had the taste of it, you've got some exposure, and then over time, it sounds like you were drawn back and found the things that were most impactful for you, right?
Yeah. And that it's really been a number of areas of my life. So I wanted to have more control of my patients. So I'm an A-type personality. I am, I think, very impatient person generally, or I used to be. I shouldn't say I am. And I was trying to find things to force myself to be, to have more control over my emotions, of my patience. And meditation was one of those tools that I was exposed to. Much of it was really returning to breathing. When I played sports, for example, and you get frustrated, or even if you got hurt at the time when I was younger, it was like, look, you take some deep breaths and center yourself, right? If when I am an avid golfer now, and one of the reasons why I got into golf years ago was, one, because I thought it was incredibly difficult and wanted to get better at it. Two, because I knew it was going to require patience to do it. And I was committed to trying to make myself a more patient person. Those two go hand in hand, by the way. I play better golf when I'm relaxed and patient and taking breaths and appreciating the experiences and living in abundance and really not stressing on all of the minute details and trying to flow through life and all those things. I can speak to golf and speak to my daily life in the same terms. And mindfulness is the key for me. I went through a period in this of my 20s, I'll call it, through college and the like, Clayton, where honestly, I missed much of it. And what I mean by that is I had all these wonderful experiences and I'd connect with friends and people and they'd be like, hey, do you remember when we were here on Friday night at this place? And do you remember when we went to that party in Miami? And do you remember when we connected and did this? And so many of the things where if you give me the right clues, I could be like, yeah. But I was just speeding through life. I was just going for so many years. Like I had goals and I was going to achieve my goals and I was going to have time and spend time with friends and do things. And I don't mean that I was missing it because of drugs or alcohol or anything like that. I just was flying. I just wasn't conscious for the moments. And I decided a few years ago that I wanted to be more present for my own life and more conscious for my own life. And in trying to do that and trying to really live and appreciate the moments as they come, mindfulness and meditation have been huge. Hugely important for me to add a little bit more space in my day,
yeah.
A little more connection to the experiences that I'm having. I would say I'm more in touch with my senses and my sensory world just because I'm more aware and more mindful about it. And when I think about meditation helps you become more mindful, meditation helps the space. But it's like that unseen where you do it because it's a good habit. Sometimes you see those, sometimes you can do a whole lot of workouts and not see muscle mass change, right? Or you can go for a walk and you know it's good for you, but you don't really feel much different after it. Or you're taking vitamins and you eat it and then you take your vitamin and you're like, people like, it's not like you instantly feel something. And I look at meditation very much in that way is like you do it. You don't necessarily feel the impact all the time. But then you have those moments, those sparks in your life or those days where you celebrate. I just had one last weekend where my son joined the same fraternity that I am in, which is Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. My father is in it too. So he's a third generation and we were at his celebration. And it was one of those typical moments where it was pure celebration and joy. And I was proud and grateful and but there was this point in time where I was there, where I appreciated that I was there, where I stopped and looked around and I took in. And by the way, there were hundreds of people around and there and celebrating. But there were friends and family who came out to support him and us. There were old college friends that I haven't seen in 20 or 30 years who were around. There were fraternity brothers that I shared lots of incredible experiences with who were there to support him being a legacy into the fraternity and who showed him love and welcomed him. My dad, who was 85, who was there, and they were people who were helping us care for him and make sure he was comfortable. And I remember going, wow, how awesome is this? How fantastic is this experience? Is this night, this very night, this moment? And I was really grateful that I was able to take it in. And I know for some people that comes easy and natural, and maybe you take in lots. For me, a lot of times it didn't. It would be later, maybe I'd go, I bet that was great. And I know it was great in the moment, but in the moment, I wasn't necessarily always taking it in. And I do much more of that now. And to me, Clayton, that's mindfulness in real time. That's one example. I think just trying to have a little space when I'm talking to people, whether it's listening more or thinking more critically about the words that are about to come out of my mouth, just having a little more presence daily is, to me, the effect of this practice over time. I believe I am better at life now. I'm 50 than I was at 45 and 49 and 48. I'm trending the right direction. And I'm excited about what I believe I can achieve personally if I continue the practice.
Yeah,
I'm living better.
Yeah. Wow, there's so much there, David. And first of all, I've been meditating for about 25 years, and I started at 45 and just turned 70 in the spring. And I will tell you that this last decade was a better decade for me personally, and my being present and being connected with family and workmates and friends in the previous decade. So it does, that trajectory can be pretty cool, knowing that it doesn't happen overnight. And I want to get back to what you're talking about, being in that moment, the celebration for your son, who's back there, and feeling like just saying, wait, I am here. And I think a lot of us zip through life and we go from one event to one moment, one interaction to another, a task, and don't take the moment to slow down, to pause. And when there is joy, to savor it. And right? And I think that sense of just letting it marinate for you, even if it's 10 seconds, and just going, oh, man. And just say, and telling yourself, this is what this is important. It's like, I'm seeing my son being celebrated by friends. So first of all, yes, son. And then yay, friends, for being there for it. Dad, thanks for getting this started.
That's right. All of the above. And Clayton, there's something special in being able to choose. And what I mean by choose is that you can choose joy. We can all choose joy. We can choose celebration. And I feel like I am trying to, and I want to live in a state, and we can all aspire. I'm not by any means assuming that. Please don't want anybody to hear this and think that I've achieved this, but I want to aspire to it. I want to be unreasonably joyful. I want to choose happiness as much as I can choose happiness. And that means being present for the moments. That means, to your point, savoring those great experiences that we have in our lives. But that also means recognizing that I have a power of choice of attitude and trying to approach each day with gratitude when I wake up, and each person I meet with curiosity to what I can learn from them and to how we can embrace and engage life together, even if it's a shared moment in time. Yeah. I've always had this weird fascination with air, by the way. I know this is going to sound random, just edit it out or cut it, but this just popped into my head and I feel compelled to share it. Like, air is this one shared resource we all have. So like, it's here. I breathe it, you breathe it. We share air and space together. So oftentimes when we're with people, you're sharing the space, but we're also sharing this oxygen and this air in the room. And we don't really think about it in a way of, what am I adding to this room? So just imagine there's some chemical that's coming out of us. Just imagine the air you breathe is a little bit richer for the people that are around you. And in many respects, I want to just breathe good air. I want to be someone who is helping, call it cleanse, enrich that air that we all share. And if it's a shared resource, gosh, let me help make it better.
David, I'm going to interrupt you.
Yeah, please.
I want to go out there. But what just popped into my head was, and again, this is mindfulness in real time, so forgive this reference to an actual meditative technique, but are you aware of Tonglen?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. What you just described to me felt like Tonglen, right? So breathing in suffering, breathing in the air that other people, their misfortune, their suffering, and being able to process this and then breathing out happiness, breathing out support, breathing out connection and loving kindness.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you were talking about not necessarily that sense of it's like the smoke coming in and breathing out, but sometimes that's so powerful, right?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. It's, look, I want to be a tool, vehicle for goodness, peace, and harmony, right? If I can. But if I can, let me add it. Let me be good. And I feel like if I'm mindful that I'm going to bring that with me wherever I go. And I'm going to try to provide goodness as I do some of the morning meditations with meditation, that Meditation for Leadership makes available to us. And thank you and to the team for making it happen. And Bill Shore, and I want to quote him, who leads sometimes on Friday mornings. And I just think it's a beautiful sentiment. He says, make each moment better because it has passed by you. And I love that sentiment, right? It's, look, we all have this opportunity, and it's an unlimited opportunity until we die to try to make each moment better. And it's just a philosophy, right? It's just an approach, a choice that we all get to make, to be conscious of how we show up at any point in time, to be conscious of what we're adding. And I can think back to my mother in my house as a kid, when I walked past a piece of paper, didn't you see it? You could pick it up. And now this room's a little bit cleaner because you just picked it up. That was a lesson that my mom was teaching me back then. It's no different. It's just no different. It's just expanding that into all aspects of our lives if we can. And I believe we'll be able to create better climates around us and a better world if we all are a little bit more mindful with what we offer.
Yeah. That thought of looking at the positive, seeking out ways to improve the ripple effect of just improve the vibe in the room, in the neighborhood, in your office, in the world. And that this is a choice involved, which I think is so important for us to think about. I think one of the off-putting aspects of how people look at mindfulness is like this toxic positivity. Oh yeah, the world is great. Look, always look on the bright side. I'm not saying that's inherently wrong, but what I would say is that taking the lead from you about choice and saying, okay, here's a situation. I can look at the elements that are damaging, challenging, threatening, right? And I may have to look at them a little bit anyway, but can I find the things in this situation which are more uplifting, where I can actually be grateful for something in this situation that will turn my threat feeling, my limbic system, calm it down and say, okay, this isn't ideal, but there's something positive here. There's something I'm grateful that I'm in this conversation with someone, even though it's a little difficult, I'm glad we're having it, right?
Yeah. It's, by the way, oh, Clayton. So I got into this lovely debate last year with two phenomenal colleagues, and it was actually on a parents and caregivers. We have an employee resource group, and we were actually doing a kind of panel talk. So it was on a panel in front of lots of people, and we got onto the topic of toxic positivity, and I struggle with it a little bit, and this is where I agree to disagree with many, but I tend to believe that there is always a choice of positivity. And this was the fundamental point of disagreement. This is not being ignorant to the fact that we live in a world with lots of negativity. We're living at a time where people are probably at such a heightened state of fear and angst and violence and tension and lack of civility and what I'll call suppressed love, because there are people who are so myopic in terms of I will take care of my own. But if you're not part of my own tribe, I'm not sharing love for you. We have some really awful things happening in our country right now, especially, but broader in the world too, right? People are not as caring and compassionate to me about everyone broadly, as opposed to just the people that they love. So I don't want to be ignorant to all of any of those things. What I will say is, with all this despair in the world, with everything that can go wrong at any given time, we can choose to try to bring light to darkness. You can choose to understand that there are awful things in them in life, but not focus on them. And that's why when I say unreasonably joyful, that's not, we are all going to have, think about the Buddha, we'll all have suffering. Everybody's going to suffer. And like, it's unavoidable in life. We're all going to have good days and bad days and things that go, as they say, stress is like wanting the moment to be different than it is, right? You're going to have that. It's natural. But then, and this is where mindfulness to me is key. It's those recognizing, being able to see your thoughts. It's able to say, aha, man, boom, there it is. I'm thinking about the world. And notice I said thinking about the world in a negative way. Let me change my thought. Let me think about what's good. Let me recognize that it's a blessing to be here. And sometimes it gets that simple. Sometimes everything around you may stink at any moment in time. I was going to curse and then realize it probably wasn't a good thing. And then, but I can choose one thing. And if I'm really operating in an optimal state and mindful, then I'm going to be thankful for my breath. I'm going to be thankful for the gift of movement. I might be, I'm thankful for the wonderful people in my life that I can rely on and call when I'm feeling down. I'm really thankful for the opportunity to get over the struggle that I have, because we know growth comes from those. That's just the lens shift, right? That's a lens shift that says, yeah, man, I'm really feeling the pressure of a tough work week. I'm really feeling the pressure of a difficult argument with the family member. But you know what? It is always an opportunity. And if we can catch ourselves in the moment to recognize that the opportunities for growth and expansion and development are always being presented to us and they're for us, then it's hard to be angry for too long. You can embrace it. You can get it. You can have it. But then you can move, then you can choose something different. And to me, that's the gift of mindfulness, Clayton. That's to me is mindfulness in real time, right? That's saying, all right, doggone it. Damn it, this moment sucks. But I'm going to choose to get through it as positively as I can, as I reasonably can in the moment. And that doesn't mean great, but it can be a lot better than staying in an awful or downtrodden state.
Yeah. Oh, man. So I'm thinking about this. I want to, everything you said just resonates really deeply with me. And I'm not surprised to hear these words come out of your mouth, but I'm joyful about them. But I was thinking back to golf. Now I'm thinking about choice and thinking about taking a difficult situation and maybe reframing it. And I'm thinking a certain Northern Irish golfer who had many years between the winning the majors.
Yeah.
And Rory not anymore. And he got close a few times. But here he comes in the Masters, and he's got this big lead in the final round, and it starts to whittle.
He's a go away.
Yes. He goes away. And then he gets tied, right? And he's got to go to a playoff. And at that moment, I think he said something about this, but I would bet dollars to donuts that at that moment, he had a choice of how he reacted. And one reaction was, scheiße, right? I just blown it.
I've just blown the lead.
Yeah. I had a big lead. It's gone. And then the other thing is, And I think this is what he said. It's like, when the tournament started on Thursday, would you
have signed? I was here. Yeah, I'd have signed up for this.
Right. Yeah, I had to be in a playoff to win it.
100%.
Sure the heck would, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's just a sports analogy, like the life analogy, right?
I was going to say, it's the same. Look, for many of us, let me speak for myself. I've had this really amazing, wonderful life and career, and I wouldn't have guessed any of it. I consider myself super fortunate, but I'd sign up for it 1,000 times over and over again. And candidly, if you started me just going to the golf analogy, if in my worst times when I'm feeling stressed, if I could remember that I would have signed up for this in a heartbeat when I was 20 or 15 or 10 or 25 or candidly 30 or 35, then I realize I'm really blessed to have whatever that problem is, whatever that challenge is, whatever that opportunity is, a blessing. And look, we're going through and we constantly have challenges at work. And we're a big organization. We're always moving and trying something new and reorganizing ourselves. And change is hard. Change is always hard, right? It's people affecting. It's organization affecting. It takes us out of our comfort zones, right? But, man, the opportunity to create and co-create with others where we go as an organization or as a business, it's a grand one. It's awesome, right? And that's one way to view change. Wow, we're going to do some things that are different. We're going to try some new things. It's just a choice still. It comes down to the same thing. It's like, how do you want to look at this moment and define it? One could say, man, that means next year is going to look a little different than this year. Is that a positive or a negative? Depends. Who knows? I love one of those saying, and I can't credit it or source it, but it's that I don't know enough to be pessimistic, right? It goes along with the thoughts of like all of those things that we think sometimes often in the moment are bad for us tend to be some of our greatest life blessings, right? Whether it's the lessons that we learn from them or what follows them or what comes next in our lives. And it's really important for us to remember that. Oftentimes, the challenges, the things that challenge us most, are also the things that bless us the most. And in real time, it's hard, but I do believe that to be true and factual.
Yeah. I often come back to our challenges are often our best teachers, and so our blessings. And listen, a challenge-free life is a pretty boring life, and I know that, again, we resist change. We resist getting out of our comfort zone. That's how we're wired. But at the same time, when we accomplish something new, the brain loves novelty. Oh, whoa, I didn't know you could do that. And I should. I'm working through something right now in a project. And man, it's stretching me in ways that I never would have believed. And I was like, you know what? I'm grateful for the work and I'm grateful for the people around me that I'm working with. And also grateful that there's neuroplasticity and I can still learn new things and say, wow, I didn't think I was capable of that. So thank you. Thank you for giving me that opportunity. Yeah. And I want to follow up more with how this show is for you at work. I know that you've had a big influence on the corporate counsel area. And I'm sure there's been, as you mentioned, there you have an ERG or number of ERGs that go corporate wide. But how would you say, in practical terms, you see some ripple effect, your influence, and not that everybody's going to say, oh, I'm going to kowtow to David, which they probably should, but what is it that you see rippling throughout your department, perhaps, and other aspects of the corporation?
Yeah, I'd say rippling would probably be giving myself too much credit. But I can at least say this, Clayton. I'm a lawyer. And in many corporations, people have what I'll call stereotypical views as to what a lawyer was going to bring to a meeting or an organization or a place. I've always prided myself to not, and this goes back to a kid, I don't necessarily fit many stereotypes. And I say that when I talk about the law, because I believe that I can be serious, but I can be joyful. I can represent the law, but I can be compassionate. I can laugh with my colleagues and friends and bring happiness to the meeting. I can hug and tell my team that I love them. And those are things, by the way, that are not typical, quote unquote, in the corporate workspace, but are not uncommon for me in my practice, right? Mm-hmm. I want to be happy. I want my colleagues to be joyful. I want to laugh in our meetings. I want us to approach our work as a team and collectively and supporting each other and being empathetic and compassionate and honest and candid. Those things are characteristics and traits that I value and that I bring to me, but I also want to ask of others from a leadership perspective. And I believe that over time, and I've been at Verizon for now, I'm working on 22 years, that I think I'd be known for bringing that, right, to the organization and to the folks that I work with, is showing, or at least attempting to show up in that way. Now, I've been really active in, and I know it's impolitic in today's day time, but it is what it is. I've been active in diversity, equity, and inclusion, and now belonging efforts, call it culture and community efforts, for many years, and they've been dear to me. And one of the reasons why is because, yes, I wanted to make sure I was always pushing to make our organization, our industry, our society a little bit better, and to ensure that there were equal opportunities and access internally and externally for all across the board, right? Which is, to me, the core of that work. But more fundamentally to mindfulness, that I was showing up with compassion and with empathy and with love and with care for my colleagues, and that we did that for each other, and that we were holding space to learn about each other and appreciate each other and celebrate each other. And while I know that's a long-winded answer, at Verizon, we have a wonderful culture, and I'll call it a culture of celebration in many respects of, and this is what happens when you have ERGs, right? Where we can appreciate the uniqueness that we all bring to the workplace, but also in a micro level with our teams and with our organization, which is our public policy and legal and security teams and folks, where I've had the great honor and fortune of leading some of efforts. It's being able to create space where we get to know each other and we spend time with each other and share about our lives with each other. And I would like to think that is part of my quote-unquote legacy or ripple effect of being someone that was helping create the spaces that were allowing people to feel valued and celebrated and candidly to be authentically themselves with each other. And if I've been able to offer that as a leader in the business, then, you know, my work has been well done. I would like to hope that's the case. I don't think any of that isn't possible if you don't try to practice mindfulness in real time. If you don't think, we put in a couple years ago, and this is post probably 3-4 years ago, maybe, we had this wonderful series that we did in our department called Empathetic Conversations. And it was really, we had a committee of people that worked on scenarios and articles and different things, worldly things that were happening in our country, which were for discussion and debate. And then we talked and introduced ourselves. And it was always a mixed group, small groups. The max was like 7. And the goal was, over a period of time, getting together with your cohort and just being in conversation, just being in community together.
And then there were topics that you would discuss, and that was always lead to people talking about family and kids and life experiences, and some good, some bad, some positive, some negative, some all of the above. And it was a wonderful, wonderfully well-received throughout the organization opportunity for us to really create space and think about how we interact together. And when I think about leadership, so many of my positive traits as leaders and things that matter most are not any of the hard skills. They're all the soft skills, Clayton. It's all the things that my mom valued most when I was younger, right? Do I care for you, each other? Are you compassionate? Are you empathetic? Do you listen to your friends? Are you listening in class? Are you talking? Are you being kind? Are you like those things? To me, help make great leaders. Yes, you need to be strategic. Yes, you need to be smart. But that's all that is what helped, what led me to meditation for leadership and mindfulness, and why that's so important to bring to the workplace to ensure that we are spending time working on ourselves as leaders. Now, I found the personal benefit in doing that in my own life, and I wanted to help provide that opportunity for others.
Yeah, and I would think that one of the most important things, if you're talking about corporate culture or organizational culture, right? Having a leader model and bring it in and day out, that this is their ethos. This is how they operate themselves. If their commitment to bring the best version of themselves wherever possible, to be empathic and to give space to celebrate the differences that we all bring, the uniqueness, et cetera, all that good stuff. But not making it, this is what you have to do. There are certain things need to be codified, but there are other things that are like, let's see it in action, right? And when the people who report to you see that in action and they go, he seems in a pretty good place, and I like the way he's treating me, maybe I can treat other people that way. And that does, again, but trying to do it from the bottom up, grassroots, is really hard. Because so much of our culture in organizations is the hierarchy.
Yeah.
So that's why that's so important. And I think you can see in some organizations, you'll see these little pockets, right? And you've got one department head here, one division leader here. And the others are like, oh my God, right guy to be over there. Like, the people in sales, they've got it going on. But being able to demonstrate that, and also the hard work right now, you mentioned DEI and belonging. That's a subject that's very near and dear to my heart. I've had the opportunity in the past to deliver training around that. It was always funny because I'd show up to do DEI training and I got to own. Privilege. Okay. And what was interesting is there were times when people said, don't discount those people in the room who are actually glad to hear this teaching coming from someone who looks like them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, I want to say that these are difficult times with this. And sticking to our guns, maybe that's not the phrase I want to use. Right. But... drawing the
metaphorically,
sticking to our guns. Thank you for that. And recognizing that we can demonstrate the ROI involved in creating a diverse workplace, in that you get away from groupthink. You have so many different points of view that are additional, they're additive. And this thought about what equity is that like giving people a job that they don't deserve? Heck no.
It's out of the boat. Never.
It's like, Clayton, you're on third base and you think you hit a triple, but you were born on third
base. Born on third base, yeah.
And it's okay, I own that, right? And I say, okay, I'm grateful for all the opportunities I had, and may I try to be as aware as possible of where I benefited, where others haven't had the opportunity.
Yeah.
And so that's where we can even out the playing field, or if we can create opportunities that in the past have not existed at all. And by the way, all of a sudden you're going, it's not a zero-sum game.
That's right. There's room.
Make it better.
And look, there's room. I love where you said that. By the way, this is a life thing, just even more than a DEI thing, right? There's room for, there is abundance. If you and I can be happy and everyone else in the room can be happy too, right? So the fact that some succeed doesn't mean others have to fail, right? You know what I mean? There is room. And when I think about the essence of DEI, whether you look at it as fairness or whether you look at it as how we treat each other and ensuring that we're not actually holding, let alone putting people on even paying people, let's not hold anybody back. Let's ensure that our policies and our practices create a fair playing field and ensure that everyone has access to the same success in our society. I think those things are incredibly important, but fundamentally, it comes down to how we treat each other. And if you look at people in the workplace, people who you work with, vendors, partners, whatever it might be in life, your friends, your neighbors, as extensions of ourselves. And I don't want to be too esoteric for this, but we are far more alike than we are different fundamentally and scientifically. And if we have religious listeners, you will say those who are of the Christian faith will say we're all made in the image of God and we're extensions and there's oneness and we're all one and the same. If you believe in that philosophy, and I can look at you on the screen, Clayton, and go, gosh, why would I want to doing something negative to you is doing it to myself. Man, if we viewed the world that way, we would treat each other better. We would look at organizations as a place where fairness has to reign supreme. We would ensure there wasn't bias in decision-making. We would ensure that teams had a diverse set of viewpoints and experiences because we know we're going to get those better results when we have them. And we would be obligated as leaders to ensure that for our companies and for ourselves that we do that, right? Because that's going to breed the best personal results, exposure to more and to others, and professional results. And it's really not that hard when we take a step back and get out of our own zones and think about it. So I'm hopeful. I remain optimistic that we will continue to be mindful of what it takes to be successful as leaders, as organizations, as a country, and as society. And if you do that with the incredible diversity that exists in this country, then you will find it as an imperative to make space for everyone.
Yeah, I'm just spending a moment letting those words marinate because that's where my greatest hope is.
Yeah, same.
And I have hope for that. I have hope for our country because I've seen just in my lifetime the pendulum swing in various ways. And just when you think it's like it's hit the worst, it's okay. People start to think differently. They start acting in ways that are more thoughtful and loving. And one of the things that I'm wrestling with, David, is the great divide. And we referenced that earlier. So there is this huge divide. And we've always been tribal. There's always been in-group, out-group. So that just pretending that is brand new is wrong. Fine. It's gotten critically worse. And I think the internet and social media has a lot to do with that. What the voices that are on podcasts that have millions of listeners like this, all that, right? But how do we bridge the divide and how do we inspire people who think they know better than the other group to say, somebody's got to take the step forward, right? Yeah. So I don't like what you're doing. You don't like what I stand for. We vote for different people. How do we make that move to say, as you said, we have way more in common than what divides us, what differentiates us? How do we move towards the commonality? And just as an aside, 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, nope, 4 years ago, my wife and I got a puppy. And we had a dog a while ago, but this is new, and he needed to walk a lot. And our house, we live on a cul-de-sac, but there's a busy road that goes on one past our house. And that busy road divides different social strata. So the houses on one side are newer and bigger, and the houses on the other side are smaller lots. And the folks living in the houses, more white collar on our side, more blue collar, working class, if you will. And if you can imagine during election time, the yard signs are very different. And we noticed that there was one neighbor who had a huge sign and a huge flag that we didn't agree with. And we go, oh. But as we were walking our dog, we'd go past this house. And this guy became our best friend because he'd come out and he'd go, Brody, give me a Brody. Yeah. And we started we didn't talk politics. We talked about what he was doing. We talked about it. And all of a sudden, we noticed everybody in this neighborhood was the same way. They greeted us not like we were on the far end of the political spectrum, but we were neighbors. And they loved our dog. And I would tell you, there were some people who come and make a really big fuss over our dog, who's a large Cavapoo, so he's a little fluffy. And they've got a pit bull mix. And you think they're going to be like, hey, watch this. But they come out and make a fuss over him. So that's a small example. Open to our eyes and our hearts. And how do we do that on a larger scale?
Yeah, boy, I wish I have a thought, but far be it. We're here to make it seem like I've got the answer to this very difficult and super important challenge that we have. My initial thought when you were, as you provide your example, Clayton, is that we have to make it a practice of cultivating curiosity. And if we can cultivate curiosity in ourselves and more broadly in others and in our communities across the board, then we won't stop at the geographic divide. We won't stop with the racial divides, the political divides. There are lots of what I'll call potential things to separate us. We find ourselves far more unified when we actually commune together. As they say, there's power in proximity. And oftentimes with social media and with our own opportunities to avoid others, we actually don't meet people. And I think when you meet people, then you develop commonality. And so when we really make it a practice of being curious and finding commonalities, then you then realize that we are all far more than one ideology, than one thing. And so we are versatile humans. There are so many different parts of me. So yeah, I might have a view politically. Yeah, I might have a job here. Yeah, I love sports and I can talk to you and you could find it in, I'm a New York Jet fan. Yeah, we haven't been great. I've got lots of people in my family who we're divided because they can't believe that I am still a Jet fan after all this many years of misery. I can argue with friends who are Celtic fans and I'm a Knicks fan. And just as you can get into those little things, you have friends, and I've got some great friends who politically see the world very differently than I do. And they're still great friends. And they're great friends because I know the type of men and women they might be, right? I know the type of parents they might be. I know that they are great professionals, right? So you know something about people that allows you to look at the broader whole of who they are, not just one aspect of who they are. And I always want people to see the all of me, right? You may not know all of me, but recognize that the portion of me that you might meet, there's more to the story. And that's for everybody. There's more to the story, right? Like when you talk to someone and you meet them, they don't know whether you're, maybe if you talk to me too long, I'll gladly tell you, I've got two wonderful boys. My twins are awesome, right? I've got a lovely dog named Cam that he's a phenomenal lab, great dog, and a beautiful wife named Tamiko, who is terrific, and she's been such a stalwart in my life for many years, right? It makes me a better person, right? So, and a terrific family and parents and all those things, right? And great jobs. But until we talk, you don't know any of those things. And so we just have to stop judging from afar. And if we don't judge and we practice curiosity, and then I'll say, and I'm a believer in CLAW, which is compassion, love, awareness, and wisdom. And I think that is the answer. I think if we treat people with compassion, I think if we love one another, if we are aware of ourselves, and this is where mindfulness becomes so key, and of our thoughts and what we bring to the table. If you do all of those things, we will find wisdom at the end of that journey. And when we find wisdom, we make wise choices. We treat each other well. And I think that will supersede all of this other BS that we allow people and ourselves to get blocked by and stuck by. And I think that's the challenge before us. And I know all that's easier said than done, but I do believe that is the way.
Truer words have not hit my ear in quite a long time. And the depth and passion with what you share them are so indicative of how important they are to you, and you live them. And that's truly important, that ability to be curious as opposed to closed-minded. And we think about this in the world of DEI and working with bias. It's like, you don't have bias.
Yeah.
But yeah. Get real about this. You have a brain, you have bias.
Yeah. No, yeah.
And our ability then to say, so what is it about my bias that's inhibiting me from having a connect with this person who seems different from me? And I'm so judgmental. And I'm like, I've sold them down the river. And at the same time, who am I? I'm no perfect human being. I have foibles. I have things that I would prefer not to talk about. But off the mic, maybe I will. But wait. But at the same time, knowing that, we be curious. Ask yourselves, what do they need and want that I haven't seen? And what's missing in their life that they see life differently? And know that we can meet there, but we don't necessarily have to shoot at that level, because you mentioned doing things at a sort of more communal level and doing the things like, hey, you know what? You look at the parking lot at a Jets game, and there are a lot of different types of people. And so you go down to Lincoln. On Ansel, Eagles fans, and
they're
folks from all walks of Philly life, right? And there's a commonality there. And we can vote differently on a November Tuesday and cheer our brains out.
That's right.
For the Tersh push. And right, but that point being, David, you mentioned the word curiosity, and I love the sense of compassion, love, awareness, and wisdom. If we embedded that in our heads, that let's try to use that acronym to live our daily lives, and we would necessarily be more open and accessible to people who don't think like we do. And all of a sudden, there may be some dialogue that starts at the level of, hey, you got a funny, fuzzy dog. I like that dog. I wouldn't put him in the backyard with mine, but he's a good dog, right? And it's okay.
That's right.
What else do we have in common? Did you eat that new restaurant over there? That was great. All of that, right? That may be where we need to start, right?
Yeah, I do. I fundamentally believe that, look, everything we have, we're people. So like all of the broader ills or things that we look at society, they're still caused by people, collections of people. And so if we hold ourselves, and we have to always start with know thyself, it's got to start here first. But if we hold ourselves accountable for our conduct and how we interact with others, then, and candidly, going back to where we were before, what we bring to the day, what we bring to our meetings, what we bring to our walks around the neighborhood, what are you bringing there, right? And if you are mindful, and this is mindfulness, this is the benefit of it, this is the promise of it, right? If you are mindful, then you will find yourself offering goodness, because you will be able to check that negative thought, check that first, gosh, oh, that's the other side of the street, or gosh, that's the sign that I don't love, or gosh, that's the car, or that's the wrong team, or whatever those things are. And then you will meet with curiosity the people, and then you will treat those people how you might want to be treated in that same scenario. And you know what? If you tend to meet someone who is unkind, you will accept them for that and move on and pass them in your life because they will exist. But that doesn't mean that you won't be kind to the next person, because you get to choose.
Yeah.
And so if we're mindful and we choose to bring kindness, that's all we can do. Control our own conduct. And I believe that if we do that, at least I try to do that for myself, and that doesn't make it easy or doesn't mean I'm successful, but I'm definitely trying, right? I'm definitely trying. And so much of it, and that's why, by the way, I love this podcast, and I love when I have a chat with you, I love mindfulness, because to me, it's the answer. It's the way. It really is. It really is the... It's right there for us. We just have to stop and embrace it and find it in ourselves. And consciousness exists in, as they call it, whether it's the spaces in between with the like or just recognizing the thoughts, it's there for us. While this seems lofty and far away, Clayton, it might not be. The movement has a, you just never know when it's right around the corner and that wave of momentum be right behind us. And next thing you know, we're all talking and singing from the same sheet of music, at least a bit more than we are now. And that might, so I'm confident that change will come. And at a minimum, everything is impermanent. So to the extent that this moment is tough, this too shall pass.
Yeah. Amen to that.
Yeah.
I can't think of a brighter note, a more appropriate note to close on, and I want to thank you, David. I had looked forward to this so much, and I want to share something. All my expectations were so exceeded. So much fun. So much fun. You brought so much to this, and I'm not surprised. I'm thrilled, and I look forward to more opportunities to spend time with your good self. That's one of my intentions going forward, is pick up the phone, say, Dan, we're coming up to see family in Jersey. Can we swing by and say hi? So count on that. Thank you for being such a wonderful presence in this conversation. And thank you for your influence and gifts flowing back to Meditation for Leadership and all that you do for Verizon, the people that you work with, modeling, and all that you do in the nonprofit world. Stay positive, man. Stay joyful. And
thank you, Clayton. Thank you so much, my friend. And I appreciate this opportunity to share this time with you. I miss you when I don't get to see you or chat with you. So I appreciate this. Thank you for doing all that you do. Just having this platform to talk about mindfulness is huge, and it's important. And it is wonderful work. So I'm grateful to you for not only your friendship, but your leadership. I admire all that you do, my friend, and who you are. So thank you so very much for this opportunity and for sharing the time.
I want to thank David Hufford for being our guest in this episode. I also want to thank John Gehring of StoryTrust Media for his great work producing. And finally, I'm always grateful for the sponsorship provided by my friends at Meditation for Leadership. So until next time, this is Clayton Platt urging you to look for those moments of mindfulness in real time in your life and see how the magic can develop.